Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio. I'm your host, Dave Custy. In our continuing series featuring artists with studios in Baltimore's Broma Seltzer Arts Tower, today my guest is Catherine Holt. Catherine Holt, for many years, worked in clay, particularly in large tiles and murals. In 1988, she began to paint and use other media on paper and canvas. More recently, she has developed a body of work that is created digitally. While her work in clay was influenced by the colors of the Western landscape, and also includes body language and personal interaction tempered with a sense of humor. Since she came to Baltimore at first for a few summers and now lives here, she is working as a mixed media painter. The work of the past 3 years addresses selective seeing, especially in a more urban environment, whether here in Baltimore or the many places where she has lived and worked. The images capture glimpses of a variety of natural and man-made objects and combine them into a single work that enhanced their incongruity. Her work now is drawn and painted on paper, generally small in scale, with some work on canvas that is no larger than 30 inches by 50 inches. The digital images are a newer venture, begun only 2 years ago. They incorporate layers of information, vivid colors, and a sense of playfulness. She has worked around the world as a resident artist or visiting faculty. Those opportunities made her understand how important it is to have a connection to and dialogue with other artists. Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio, Catherine.
Well, thank you, Dave.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I've moved to Baltimore a year and a half ago after thinking about it for quite a while. I lived in Colorado. I grew up in Chicago, actually, and went to school there, and then moved to Colorado after I was married and became an artist while I was in Colorado. Originally, I had studied journalism. I have a degree in journalism. When I got to Denver, I was having a hard time finding a job, had a little baby, and decided I needed something to do. I ended up taking classes at the local community college, where I eventually began to teach, and almost 35 years later, retired from. So coming to Baltimore has been just a great experience. I have family here now, which was one of the reasons we came out here, but I just happen to like the city a lot. It reminds me very much of where I grew up. It's culturally rich. It has the feeling of a workers' kind of city, and it resembles Chicago in many, many ways, but it's smaller, much more accessible, and I'm delighting in that newfound adventure that we're having after having moved here. One of the greatest surprises that I've had has been to find what an incredible, lively, deep, and rich arts community we have here in Baltimore. The kind of support that artists get, the kind of visibility that artists get, is really something I have not experienced before, not certainly on the multi levels that I've seen here.
It's good that you've adapted to Baltimore.
Oh.
But let's back up a little bit. When you started teaching, what did you teach?
Well, I taught the clay program at the college, but I also really liked teaching non-art majors in a course, a visual communications course, you know, full of engineers and nursing students and computer folks and business folks. I liked that because I really felt like as an artist, it's really important to educate the population in general as to what it is that we do. And it was such a great pleasure to see them go from, well, often I'd ask in the classroom on the first day, how many of you have ever been to a museum? And of course, you'd get quite a few hands raised. How many of you have ever bought a piece of original artwork? And the hands would go down.
Bless your hands.
And I'd say, well, and how many of you actually know a visual artist? Do you know anybody who actually does this as their life's work? And most of the time, if you got one or two hands, you were doing really good. And I said, you know, now you do. You know one. That's what I do. That's what I am. And over the course of time, I could bring them to the point where they could really read works of art and experience them in a deeper way than they ever would have before. And so that was a big rush, you know, seeing people who could at the beginning say, yeah, I like that. That one's kind of green. Mm-hmm. <You know>? And then to going to, I will never forget a great experience. The last week of the class, we would always go to the museum, the Denver Art Museum, and wander through and and as a group and talk about what we were seeing. And at the end of a day, we sat down in front of a piece that had a lot of content in it, and that's why I brought the students there. And I said, you know, now it's time for me to step out of this and you to talk to each other about this. And so they had a very lively discussion of all of it, and I was really pleased. And after 20 or 30 minutes working on one piece of art, a lady taps me on the shoulder because I'm standing in the back of the group. She taps me on the shoulder and she says, "Do you think that your students would like to meet the artist?" And I said, yes. She says, "Well, it's my husband, and he's standing in the next room and has been listening to your students all 30 minutes of this discussion." And he walks in, and I introduced him, and they're all sitting there thinking, "Wow, this is really cool." And I'm thinking, "Yeah, this is like Van Gogh walking in." Yeah, but he was so thrilled at how articulate they were, you know, how people who really didn't have a strong interest in art before then were, and how much they could get out of this painting that he had done. As a matter of fact, he sat and talked to them for another half an hour, and he could hardly tear himself away. And to me, when that happens, it's such a joy. You know, it's a big rush for an artist to hear people talk about what they do. I'm actually doing a little bit of that same kind of thing now, only in a different way. On Saturdays at the Bromo Tower, we have open studios. And one of the things I have learned about since I've been having my open studios there is how much fun it is to talk to people who just come there so they can go up into the bell tower or the clock tower and, you know, see the works and all of that. And since my studio is really very high up in the building, I'm probably the first studio they come to as they walk down from the clock tower. And so all sorts of people have been coming in, and I've been enjoying talking to them about what I'm doing and seeing them get it and seeing them not get it and just hearing what they have to say. One of the things I love is that they almost always find something in any single piece that they're drawn to. And that's very exciting. As an artist, you don't get that kind of immediate response. You do from your colleagues, but for people who don't necessarily know a lot about art, it's kind of a thrill.
It's very gratifying. The thing about visual arts is that you come across with your own vision and your own reason for doing it, and people will come in and they'll see something from their experiences, and they'll say something that maybe you hadn't realized, or maybe you had and thought, well, that's a kind of a third or a fourth thing that I want to do, but it's great that they get it. But even though if they get something that you hadn't even realized, that is just very gratifying.
I mean, really, that's true, and it's really important for the artist to see and hear that. Because you know what you're putting in most of the time, but there are things that you do with less than complete understanding. And when someone sees that and shares that with you, it's pretty exciting. I recall we had a couple of students, medical students from the university, which is just blocks away. It was kind of funny because they originally wanted to go to the sports museum, but it was closed. So they decided, well, we might as well just go over to the Bromo Tower and check out the clock tower. And so they did, and they're walking down, and they came in and were looking around, and I was chatting with them. And they said, "So what is all this stuff?" And I said, well, and I was pointing out different things in different images. And then one of them turns and looks at a piece, and he says, "Hey, that's an EEG device, an electroencephalograph device." And I said, yeah, it is. I just thought it was really beautiful and put it in here. And he says, "Do you know what that is?" I say, "Yeah, I know what it is." He says, "I know what it is." He says, "I'm a medical engineering student." And I thought, that's really kind of fun. A friend came to visit, and he looked at one and he went, "Hey, there's my snake." And I said, "Your snake?" He says, "I didn't even know you had snakes." And he says, "Yeah, there's a bit, it has that, there it is. It's right in one of your pieces. There's just a little section that I'd cut out of something and included in the image." And I thought, you know, that's kind of fun now. I mean, I just thought it was beautiful, but now I also have this additional memory. And I kind of hope that the work does evoke some of that from the viewer. You know, that's the connection
point.
It does.
It does. If somebody else comes up with something else mm-hmm. in it, an interest in it, for one thing, at a mm-hmm. basic level, and then in B, it's something, it hits them mm-hmm. deeper than just, it's a stick person or something like that. Right. Yeah. Let's go back a little bit in terms of your teaching.
Okay.
How long did you teach for?
A long, long time. I taught for about 30.
I didn't mean to be indelicate. Or
yeah, well,
like that,
that's all right.
There's a question toward that question.
I taught for about 35 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Loved every minute of it. Loved going to work every day.
You talked about that. It was great that you really loved it and that you really learned from your students.
But oh, yes.
Extrapolate on that a bit. How does that influence your art, that the 35 years of teaching?
I guess it's that you are constantly in communication with people who are interested in the same kinds of things that you do. When you see when you teach studio art, you're working with minds who are trying to make sense of things in some of the same ways that you are trying to make sense of things. And so there's a constant questioning, a constant dynamic between you and them, sometimes very personal, sometimes very obscure. Mm-hmm. But it makes you realize the shift from being a teacher to the shift of being an artist isn't all that different.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're trying to tell someone something, or you're trying to share something with someone else. You're trying to get a response from them. You're trying to evoke, even sometimes provoke them. And so it's, for me, was not that different. I had a fairly seamless life between my home, which was a few seconds away practically from the studio, and my classroom and studio, and my own personal studio as well. They were kind of a very comfortable, not just balance, but they were very integrated.
Well, that's what I like about visual arts too, because most of the artists, or possibly all the artists that I've known, they still get gratification if people hate their stuff.
Oh,
because
yes.
That means that they have thought about it, and that's a response. Exactly.
Yes, yes. You're engaged. It's like any conversation. You can have a very pleasant conversation. Oh, isn't that a nice painting? I like blue.
Yeah,
or you can have a really deep and meaningful conversation, but you can also have conversations that turn into an argument.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the visual arts are just one of the many ways that we as human beings communicate. And, you know, the communication isn't always good.
But it's still communication.
Exactly.
And it's better than, look at that. I'm on.
Exactly. Nothing worse. Nothing worse than having an opening where people grab a glass of wine, eat a piece of cheese, and browse around and walk right out when they really haven't looked. It's really wonderful when you see people looking at your work and trying to make something.
Right. Or even if they're just looking at it for a while and they still can't figure it out, but they're still trying.
That's
that
right.
That makes it, you know,
absolutely
more endearing.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go up to the current day.
Okay.
Tell us what you're working on now.
I'm working on some pieces. Actually, I have two different series going right now. One is, to me, actually the more important one, just because it's more compelling. The other is a lot more fun. The work I'm doing now is to take images that we see. We're bombarded with visual images. Our culture is a really visual culture, visual and auditory in particular. And I try to collect images, whether it's from a book or from something I see online, or if it's from a magazine or from any number of different places, and select some of the things that I find particularly striking or curious or confrontational sometimes, and then sort those into a composition and translate that composition into a finished piece. So you'll see bits of a lot of different things in those images. And what they are is, it almost becomes like a story. I try not to have it be too direct a story, but the kind of story that has a few visual references that you can connect to, obviously. And then I look at it not so much as a conflict or juxtaposition, not at all, but more of things that might be a little bit evocative or incongruous. You know, why are there parrots right next to that piece of machinery, you know, or the door handle, mm-hmm. or whatever? And I think that that's because that's how we actually see things. You know, when we look around, we don't just look at one thing. No, we look at a lot of things.
Straightforward.
No. And so hopefully you have that kind of experience when you look at it. You recognize some things and then you wonder what some of the others really are. And then ultimately you write your own story about them.
That's terrific.
Yeah.
Here's a question I like to ask artists. Do you have a hard time finishing? Because a friend of mine, a real good friend of mine, I would be in a studio and he would be painting and then he said, I think this is it. And then he'd go back a few minutes later and say something more. I said, come on, this is terrific. Leave it alone. Nah, look at this. Over there. What do you think of this?
Yeah, of course. You know, of course, we all do that. When I was working in clay, that was a really straightforward answer because it was done when you took it out of the kiln. Yeah. You know? Unlike painters, ceramists have to take whatever it is they've been working on and submit it to, 2,500 degree temperatures. Right. And when it comes out, it may or may not look like what you intended. It's a very risky business. Mm-hmm. Whereas working in paint or colored pencil or ink or whatever you want, you can continue to work on it. You could work on it 10 years later if you wanted to. But I kind of gotten to the point now where I pretty much know when it's done. There's always a moment when you're working on it when you see, oh, yes, this is going to really work. Or there's always a moment where you go, I hate this. I don't want to look at it anymore. And what I used to tell my students and what I tell myself is, no, stop. Look for a moment, have a check it out, and keep going. And ultimately, you will know if it's really going to work or not. But you can't stop just because you don't like it anymore. That's a tough one to teach a student. They're like, yeah, I want a new piece of paper. Can I start over again? You know, well, you could, but it might be better if you just kept going.
How did you come up to and decide on the size? Like you say, 30 inches by 50 inches currently is your top.
Yeah.
I have a friend of mine, an artist in Belfast, does these canvases that are 8 feet wide by 6 feet high, and the biggest problem, they're gorgeous, but the biggest problem is transportation.
You have to take
all sorts of things into consideration.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I used to do work on a very large scale. When I was, I used to do site works in the landscape. When there is so much landscape as you get in the West, it seems like a natural thing to do. And they would be huge, and they would be heavy. And I also used to do large tile mural kinds of projects. Mm. And you do those when you're a little younger when you have a staff. I also used to design for the theater and paint for the theater.
Oh,
and that sort of got my real need for working large satisfied.
Out of the way.
Yeah. But now I feel like I'm working on more personal work than I've ever worked on before. And it's painstaking work because the work has a tremendous amount of detail in it. I mean, it takes me 30 to 40 hours to complete one image. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of time to put into a small piece. The canvases are larger and they're much more expressive and they have less detail in them. The drawings and paintings on paper are very small. They're probably 15 by 12, I think, about. And they're very dense. They're very dense. They have a lot of color and a lot of texture and a lot of detail to them. They're very realistically drawn and painted. If you look at them, there are lots of things that don't go together, so they don't seem so. Calling them realistic is kind of a difficult thing. You don't see bird wings next to hinges. But to create a really huge image or even a medium-sized image would be months and months of work for one piece. And I know that I don't have that kind of patience. I kind of think of these as little gems, as opposed to these huge things I used to work on.
If I went to the Broom-Seltzer Arts Tower, what kind of work would I see of yours?
You'll see the things I was just talking about. You'll see that there and there. And I've got work in progress. You'd see that. Mm-hmm. You would see how I construct them. You would see then how I go about completing the image. You would also see some older work of mine that I just kind of keep hanging around because it reminds me of good old days. And then you would also see some of the graphics work that I'm doing. I'm doing a whole, I actually have quite a big body of work that I've done actually on my iPad using a program called Sketchbook Pro. Mm-hmm. And those are very playful, very whimsical. They're very abstracted, lots of color, lots of vitality. You would see those as well. Those are there too.
So tell me when you are usually there, or you're there on Saturdays. They do the whole thing on Saturday.
Yeah, I try to be.
Tell me about that.
On Saturdays, the tower is open to the public to come and visit artists in their studios. But because it's also open on Saturdays to the public for visiting the actual clock tower. The clock tower is on the 16th floor. You can get a guided tour of it. You cannot go up there by yourself. You have to actually go through a little session. There's a small historical spot there that you can see the history of the Bromo Tower. And there's a gallery space on the mezzanine and a couple of small gallery spaces on the first floor. Because I'm on the 14th floor and the 15th floor is currently, I don't know if anybody's up there right now, I'll be the first person you would run into as you walk downstairs through the tower. You'll see artwork all over the walls. Mm-hmm. You know, the first Saturday of the month is the one where you would see the most artists having open studio, but people are there. They're there on Saturday as well.
Now, your other interests, you're a trustee with the Baltimore Clay Works.
Oh, yes, I am.
Bit.
Well, because I spent so many years in the clay world, I have lots of friends and a healthy network of people. And when I first came out here, Deb was just wonderful and introduced me to some people. And one of my students came out about, I think this is her third year at the Baltimore Clay Works. She's a former student of mine, Michelle Swafford. She actually lived in my house the first year or two while I was still in Denver. And I got to know some of the people there, and I was asked to be on the board. And it's such a wonderful organization, I could hardly say no. I mean, and they're just great people there. And it's such an asset to the city. It really is. They have such such wonderful outreach programs, but they also have a very, very fine national and international reputation of resident artists and resident programs and exhibitions and that sort of thing, too. So I've known about them for long before I knew very much at all about Baltimore.
And you think you'll stay with them for a while?
I hope so. I'm enjoying myself working with the folks there. It's been really great. We just have a brand new executive director who is doing a great job, just doing great, Sarah McCann. Mm-hmm. And I meet with her weekly almost, and it's a great interchange for me. It's a nice network to plug into. The clay people, clay world is really very friendly and interactive.
Clay world, I like that.
Yeah, well, it is.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, what do you like about Baltimore?
You know, I live here in Fells Point.
A block away from the studio.
That's right. And I feel like the world is right outside my door all the time. And it often is. Sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's not so great.
And that's what you mean.
But you know what? I love the mix. You know, I love the ethnic mix, the cultural mix. I love that we're near water. We're near the hills, or in the woods are not that far away. I love the fact that I drive down Lombard Street to get to my studio, and there's the tower blocks away. I can see it.
Lombard and Utah.
Yeah, Lombard and Utah, yeah. Yes. And, you know, I keep looking. I've been in the studio for almost 3 months, and I still can't get over it as I'm driving down the street that's where I get to go to work every day. It's just great.
It's a gorgeous-looking place.
It is. It is. And it's a privilege. When I first was here, I was in another studio in Highland Town. Loved it. It was a great space. It was called the Pine Box Art Center. But they sort of altered their plan. They're doing a more nomadic kind of gallery space now. And so I had to find a place. And when I saw what I could have at the Bromo Tower, I was just thrilled. And one of the nicest things about it is that there are other artists in the building working. And, you know, there's just a kind of level of energy there. Well, it's just nice to have other people working around you. You don't feel like you're in a great big space all by yourself. This is... And I had a studio in Colorado, and I was pretty much in there by myself, mm-hmm. and I knew that wasn't feeding me, so this is much better.
What's the size of your studio?
It's not very big. It's about the size of a good-sized bedroom, you know, maybe
11 by 14 or something?
Yeah, about like that. But it's sufficient for what I'm doing. If you wanted to do really huge works, that would be tough.
That's past your huge works
yeah.
phase.
Oh, but you know, there are other places to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, if sure. you really had a project you wanted to work on, you could find another place to do that.
But it works well.
It works perfectly for me. Yeah, and I have great views.
One little more thing about Baltimore.
Sure.
You told me, and I hope you can let me say this, that you were renovating your house and you do the kitchen that you ate out a lot. What was your favorite places around here?
Well, my very favorite place is right downstairs from the studio here.
Henninger's. Yes.
Yeah, it's absolutely my favorite. But there are so many. I mean, are you kidding me? In Fells Point, I mean, you could eat out every day for months.
The rest of your life, really,
And not see the same place twice.
No, that's
so
true. That's very true.
Without a doubt. I'll put in a plug for Ale Mary's, too. It's my favorite local place to go over and have a beer and a hamburger.
It's really nice to be able to walk to every place.
Oh, it is.
That's
great.
What I get from most people here and saying, it's great to live here because I really don't need a car most of the time except to go to work and stuff like that. And I don't have a car myself, so I can get everywhere. And plus, if I don't.
Exactly.
I got the circulator and getting into town.
That's right.
So it's really
that's true.
Quite convenient.
And in the summer, you could just take the water taxi, which I love the water taxi, and I can actually take that over to the studio.
Go over Silo Point and such.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's great. So we talked about your history. We talked about what you're doing currently. What do you see your work in a few years up to 10, 15, whatever you want to talk about there?
Who knows?
Okay, that's fair enough.
But,
we'll go on.
But I think for in the next few years, I'm going to continue with this body of work that I'm doing. I know that I have a couple of years of work in it. And then I'll just kind of see where it leads me next. That's hard to say. Things come up.
Yeah.
You know,
I know it is a tough question, but I like to ask. Mostly people in a regular type of business won't be able to answer that. Mm-hmm. Artists say, you know, if you asked you 20 years ago that you'd be doing this, you would have not even been close, weren't you?
No. I'd have been right on the money.
You would have?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, then forget that question.
No, because...
Oh, that theory out there.
No, really. I would be doing art, you know? I mean, 20 years ago, anyway.
But I'm just needing the type, you know, and what you're doing. You're 30 by 50 in there.
You know, one of the things about being an artist is there's always something new that's going to make you want to do it. You know? It's not that your work doesn't change. My work has changed over time quite a lot. But that's over 30, 40 years. And so what do I see in the next 10? Probably something else than what I'm doing now, but it'll certainly be related because all of it comes from the same person. And as you experience things and learn things, that ends up in your work. And so I hope I'm not going to stop learning something. I don't think that's even possible.
We all learn every day.
Absolutely.
You gotta grow,
and
keep
so
growing.
That goes into the work as well. And that's what changes it is what you experience. And listen, the big change of moving from Denver, Colorado to Baltimore was a huge change. It's been a great adventure, and it has changed my work already. And as I am here and learn more about my surroundings, I'm sure I will change. I'm sure the work will change.
It's been terrific. I've enjoyed this tremendously. I hope you have too.
I have. Very
Is there anything
much.
Else you want to add?
No, I don't think so. I can be reached at the...
Yeah, give them your contact.
Yeah, I can be reached at the Bromo Tower if you like. You can also reach me at kholt@aol.com. I have a website in progress right this minute. It should be up and around in about a couple of weeks at kathryn holtstudio.com. Catherine Holt Studio.
Wonderful. It's been terrific talking to
you. I enjoyed it, Dave.
I've been talking to Catherine Holt, who is a visual artist with the studio at the Bromo Seltzer Arts Tower. Thank you for being here on
My
Baltimore
pleasure.
Internet Radio. I'm your
My
host,
pleasure.
Dave Custy. Until next time.